Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this inaugural edition of Masters in Credit. It's another APS Portfolio Strategy call. And our focus today is really on the roller coaster ride that we've had in credit this year. And I think if basically anybody is beyond the age of 13, roller coasters these days leave a lot of folks pretty wobbly. Fortunately, we've got just a tremendous guest here with us today to help us start to figure out some of what has happened and probably more importantly, what we think may happen going forward. And that's Joe Maroney. Joe is a partner, head of sustainable finance, and co-head of global corporate credit at Apollo Global Management. Joe has been in the trenches in levered loans and CLOs for more than 28 years, and he helps oversee Redding Ridge Asset Management, which is Apollo's platform for managing about $19.5 billion in CLOs. So, Joe, welcome to the call today. We're glad to have you.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Steve.
So I'm sure I don't have to go very far to paint the picture of what has happened, and also prospectively what's going to continue going, at least from the Fed side. We got minutes again today suggesting that they are clearly going to continue pushing up rates. They've done that sharply since January. Credit spreads are wider. How do you think the levered loan market is kind of surviving this onslaught of rising interest expense and the tightening of credit so far?
Yeah, I would say so far so good, but I don't know that the last couple of months is a fair assessment period. I think we all know rate hikes take a couple of months to work their way through the economy, 6 to 9 months. And so I think really, the question of what companies have done year to date is probably less interesting than the one, of how are they going to do from here on out? Because I do think that Q3 earnings, which, the market is certainly sort of, given the volatility of late, is agreeing with, Q3 earnings are really going to be, I think, the first real test of how companies have been holding up, year to date, with not just, kind of higher rates thrown at them, but the impacts of commodity costs and, the slowdown that has been sort of in motion over the last couple of months. When you look at Q1 and Q2 fundamentals, the momentum actually on fundamentals has been very strong. You've seen, quarter over quarter sequential improvements in debt to EBITDA, in revenues and certain metrics, continue to strengthen even into Q2. I think probably Q3 is where we see that reverse a bit, the trend reverse. And, ultimately, where we end up from a fundamental picture perspective is really going to depend on kind of what happens going forward and how long we're in this period. But I think we've been pleasantly surprised with how companies have performed to date, this year, but understanding the true impact of rates and things like that is only now really starting to filter into the broader economy.
Okay. So if you're looking at, the wide spectrum of companies out there and you're starting to imagine what could happen, as you're pointing out, 6 months, 6 to 9 months down the road, do you have a view on sectors that look particularly well prepared for that stuff and others that look exposed?
Sure. Well, so I will say, so buried in those fundamental numbers that I mentioned, the one negative thing that we did see was some margin degradation, and that's a direct result of, companies that are either the beneficiaries of or on the other side of being able to pass through commodity costs and things like investor sentiment and consumer sentiment. So obviously, as I would say, year to date and depending and probably for the foreseeable future, energy has been, a winner. I would say, year to date, from a fundamental perspective, you've seen outperformance from airlines, gaming and leisure, again, the kind of the pent up demand for travel and things like that. And obviously commodities, bigger picture away from the loan and high yield market, obviously, longer term, real assets, whether it be infrastructure or, real estate, longer term, those types of real assets are the beneficiaries, of inflation over the longer term. So I think, away from the leveraged finance markets, those are attractive areas. The underperformers year to date, again, retail, not a big surprise. That's been a challenge for a number of years and will continue to, go through its evolution. Broadcasting and media, you've seen some noise, out of some of the large media companies, autos, foods, food and beverage, chemical companies, a lot of companies dealing with commodity and supply chain challenges that really can't pass those along to consumers. So, I would say those probably continue to be the trends. Momentum is your friend or your foe there for those sectors. Mm-hmm. I think the one that in leverage finance, the one that I think bears watching, obviously with the washout in tech and NASDAQ, for at least from a valuations perspective, software has been, a big, big space in the lev fin markets over the last couple of years. And it'd be interesting to see, whether or not what's going on there and the NASDAQ has broader implications for some of the they tend to be more cash flow generating companies, not, not these, unprofitable unicorns, but nonetheless, valuations play a big role in exits there. And so that'll be an interesting space to watch, I think, over the next couple of years.
And I think if I'm remembering correctly, software and electronics is the biggest exposure in leveraged loans right now.
If not the biggest, it's, right next to healthcare is probably the biggest. And that comes from out of nowhere. A couple of years ago, it was a blip on the radar. So, yeah, it's become a very sizable component of the leveraged finance markets in just a short period of time.
So what is it about software that makes them so vulnerable to these kind of circumstances?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm certainly no tech expert, but, many of them, while they may generate cash flow, and that's a difference between, I think, credit and equities, right? I mean, equities, a lot of these companies are still net income negative. And if you look at that, when you think about discount rates and time to profitability, a higher discount rate on a negative cash flow is not a helpful thing. We obviously, not to say we don't look at net income, but in our world, we kind of stop at the EBITDA line. And a lot of these companies do generate, they have good business franchise, good strong business positioning. They generate free cash flow. Again, leverage is, they tend to have higher leverage multiples than typical industrial. So I think that's something that bears watching. Does the broader economic slowdown, are these businesses do they continue to have resolve through a bit of a tough economic patch? Are they resilient? And only time will tell. I mean, hopefully, not just we as Apollo, but we as a market have done a good job in, picking our credits and, underwriting the right credits and, they will have that resiliency, but, you just never know. But to your point, given it's gone from a small exposure to one of the largest, its performance over the next, year, two, 3 years in a rougher economic environment is going to be a big impact on broad index performance. So it bears watching.
Okay. Actually, I was remiss at the top of the call to mention to our listeners, on your WebEx, there is a little box in the lower right where you can ask questions for me, Joe, at any point in the conversation. So again, on the lower right side of your WebEx, there's a box for a little bit of Q&A, so please feel free. We encourage you to use that. So, Joe, you mentioned slowdown, and I'm going to go ahead and jump to the possibility of recession. How does a levered loan book or maybe even a general credit book, does that change things? Is that just slow down of a different degree, or does a recession make a material difference in how you think these credits perform?
So I think you have to, you know, it's funny, whenever we talk about the possibility of recession, I'm reminded that we've had two consecutive quarters of negative GDP prints. So I guess I always forgot the part of the definition that, you know, that the NAB has to declare it and those other things. But, you know, it feels like we probably in one, it's a weird mix of stuff. And you know, not to go too off piste. I mean, you walk out your door and you can see clear signs of what feels like a recession. And then other examples, you make a left instead of a right, and it feels like it's, you know, going gangbusters and, you know, what recession. So it is a weird time. I would say it really depends. I've been, you know, for my investors, I've been, I've made up a imagery, a capital R recession versus a lowercase r recession. And I think it really depends on what we're talking about. You know, I've heard, a lot more talk of late about the concept of an earnings recession as opposed to a more typical, you know, blood in the streets, you know, on Main Street USA, high unemployment, more of an earnings recession than an uglier version. And I think in a lowercase r recession, are defaults going to head up from here? You know, we're a rough number, we're about 1.5% on an LTM basis for the leveraged loan and high yield bond markets. Are they headed higher? For sure. You know, higher rates are going to push borrowers that were already stretched and sort of had probably inevitably going to default anyway. It's going to pull some of that forward and accelerate that. Obviously, some business models that maybe weren't as resilient. You talked about some of the sectors underperforming and their inability to pass through higher costs and things like that. You know, might some of the things going on in the world push some of those at the margin into default? Yes. So defaults are definitely going up. But in a typical sort of capital R recession scenario, you know, you almost invariably see defaults spike to somewhere of 10% or higher. You know, you typically see unemployment spike to, you know, 6-7%. And while we could certainly get there, you know, even if you think the markets are going to be volatile, the earnings recession sort of style slowdown, which I think is probably the base case right now, and I would subscribe to, doesn't really speak to 10% defaults or, you know, 6-7% unemployment rates. And in that environment, like, again, defaults are going to go up. I'm not smart enough to tell you whether that means 3%, which is the long-term average, and a big jump from where we are today, or 4%. But it doesn't feel like it's a catastrophic type number. And I think you can get reasonable performance out of the broad loan market in a lowercase r earnings recession type scenario. And particularly and this is where you start talking a little bit between the difference between leveraged loans, senior secured in the cap structure, and, you know, some mezzanine or you know, subordinated debt. You definitely get differences in performance between those two asset classes, you know, a bit more bifurcation. But overall, I would say I compare and contrast. I've been doing this long enough now, and I look at some of the businesses, you know, and it feels like we as a market are underwriting better businesses today than we were 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. So I'm a little bit more optimistic about overall performance through a recession, though that's not to mean that there won't be pockets of pain.
Well, if it's any comfort, a lot of the investors we talk to also seem to think that, I don't know if they phrase it in the exact terms, but they describe this as a recession that is likely to be at least controlled, because this would be one that the Fed essentially is inducing, as opposed to the 2020 recession, for example, the stresses that were around 2015, 2016, or even the global financial crisis, which were recessions of the financial system. So it definitely seems like it's going to be a different flavor this time around. Let me turn just for a moment to strategy. So we've got slower growth coming. We clearly have higher interest rates. Are you supposed to play defense or offense in that kind of market?
I would probably say a little bit. I wouldn't be an Apollo employee if I didn't say a little bit of both, right? I will say though, it feels like if you weren't defensive coming into this year, it's a little bit late to get defensive unless you think there's a significant leg down from here. You know, IG bonds are down 17%, high yields down 12%, loans are down, 2%, 2.5%, 3%, year to date. So you've, if you weren't defensive already, being defensive and repositioning here, never a bad idea, but I wouldn't, I'd at this point, I'd probably turn offensive. But, we not that we saw this coming, I would say, it was fairly obvious, I think, to everybody, and you guys are probably saying the same things coming out of 21 into 20, that 22, that this year is going to be a weird year. It's going to be a volatile year. You know, everybody knew we were, the Fed was going to be raising rates and we were going to making the transition from, QE to QT. Obviously you throw in some extra, you throw in Russia, Ukraine and some of the other things going on. So it's always hard to define when you say you expect volatility, how to exactly define is probably more than we all expected, but we positioned ourselves sort of in advance of that. Our multi-asset credit portfolios, we were weighted 70% to floating rate coming into this year. And, that has allowed us that puts us in a position to then be a little bit more aggressive. Of course, my computer here froze up mid Zoom here. So hold on 1 second. There you are. You're back.
You're back.
The timer on my computer went. So we're able now, given our exposure to floating rate, and we've been outperforming the broader markets by a wide margin. It gives us an opportunity now to monetize that outperformance. Still not absolute positive negative, but down less. At some point, kind of monetize that outperformance and begin pivoting towards some of the unbelievable opportunities that the market will be presented with over the next couple of months. It's difficult to pick a bottom. There's multiple sayings about market timing, and I think it's a fool's errand to try to market time. But it's not often, and certainly not. I've been doing this now. We've both been doing this for a long time. I don't remember too many times where you can invest in high yield bonds above, performing assets above, 9% yields, investment grade, short duration investment grade north of 6% yields. So there are definitely, not for the faint of heart, but there are compelling opportunities that both the liquid market is offering up now and will continue to offer probably for the next couple of months, as well as in the private market. So I think if you have now being going on offense or being aggressive, you got to have cash, right? So I think it's if you're going to make a pivot, if you're fully long and you don't have cash, you got to do your own, go through your portfolio, find out what you can part ways with, and then really pick your spots. But I do think we're going to bump along the bottom here for a couple of months. I think there's probably a bit more pain to be incurred. It feels like there's got to be additional downside to the market, both equities and especially credit. But I think, we've been sort of legging in now again, with that understanding that we can't pick the bottom, and stuff we buy today might trade down a little bit lower, but I think we can see a bit of a bottom being formed, and we do think the next couple of quarters are going to represent really, really attractive opportunities for credit investors that you just haven't seen in a long, long time.
So you mentioned something interesting a minute ago, private versus public credit, and that's part of the credit market stories this year, where all of a sudden the public markets were offering spread that we'd not seen in quite a long time. So how do you think about that trade-off, the pluses and minuses of going public or private in the assets that you end up buying?
Sure. I get this question a lot, and I think it's difficult to blanket say one is more attractive than the other, because not to be a total cop out and say I think that there's a place for both in a portfolio. They're very, it's the same fundamental underlying risk, but the markets are very different and they offer different things. I think the liquid markets are obviously give you an opportunity to deploy large amounts quickly and in a very convex way, right? So if you want to add really good, you know, kind of convexity to your portfolio, which again, we haven't really had in our markets in a long time, you know, that creates a unique return profile for portfolios. You know, private credit, you know, is a little bit different, obviously more directly originated. You've got a more direct hand in structuring the deals to help really create, you know, a nice downside protected position. You know, people talk about cove light for the last couple of years, you know, and while we're certainly not back to like fully covenanted old school deals from 20 years ago, certainly the structures and the documents that you negotiate today are a lot better and a lot more lender friendly than you would have seen 6 or 9 months ago. And so that presents an element of downside protection. But they tend to be closer to par, higher coupon, more carry type trades. And obviously, you know, that one of the benefits of private credit, why people have been flocking to it, is it's just less volatile, you know, it from a mark to market perspective. And, so I think there's pipelines for both. I think there's opportunities in both, but they just provide you very different return profiles, and maybe you get to the same way. So I think there's a home for both in people's portfolios, and obviously we're a big player in both. So we're practicing what we preach.
Got it. So on the idea of a credit bottom, I know you mentioned earlier that at least defaults that we're looking at now are essentially a backward looking view of what we've been through so far this year, and the real stuff is over the next 6 to 9 months. But how easy will it be to form a bottom? Do you think we have to wait until we start seeing some juicy defaults out there?
I don't think that it's going to be defaults. Defaults are a lagging indicator, as you point out. Like, defaults will bottom and hit their peak after the market and the equity markets have already decided the bottom is in and started rallying, right? And so defaults are never a great indicator of really anything, you know, again, lagging. You know, for me, I think it's going to be, and I'm certainly no economist. I kind of want to see the visibility on inflation everything the markets have been talking about. You know, like when we feel like that we've all got a collective view that inflation is decidedly on the way down and there's a path there. You may not know how long, but like we know the worst is past. When we feel like that then translates into maybe not the Fed being done, but you know, the end is in sight. I think that is when markets begin, you know, they're discounting mechanisms, right? That's when markets start to form that bottom, when they say, I can see the end of the story. The end of the movie is in sight. And that's when the markets are going to start consolidating and sort of cleaning themselves up and dusting themselves off and picking themselves off the ground. So I think everything else will happen after that. And many metrics and indicators, will peak after that point. But I think I think it's going to be when we've got, and you know, you saw the print today on CPI, no real relief in sight on inflation. You know, Fed continues to be ever more hawkish in their comments because they want to make sure that nobody believes in the Fed put. I think when that stuff starts dying down, I think that begins to signal the bottom of the financial markets, maybe not necessarily the economic and earnings trough, which will follow a little bit later. But by then it'll be priced in and people will be expecting it, right? It's all about expectations.
Got it. Okay, let's pivot a little bit. Let's talk about CLOs. Like one of the issues in the CLO market this year has been a lot of good managers coming into this year very enthusiastic about their possibilities, and then all of a sudden seeing the price of their warehouse assets drop. So there are a lot of folks that are caught in warehouses. Yeah. And it doesn't look like there's been much relief yet, at least based on publicly available data. How does that resolve? How does that play out in your view?
Yeah. So far, I would say the banks, you know, that are the holders and providers of these warehouses have been, I think, really accommodative to most managers in terms of, you know, extending terms and tenors and, you know, trying to not at the first sight of volatility, you know, kind of blow people out and liquidate things. But at the end of the day, though, that can only go on for so long. You know, the banks extend that balance sheet capacity for warehouses in the hopes of it being a fee and revenue generating activity. And, you know, they're not in the business of letting these portfolios sit on their balance sheets and gobble up space forever. You know, especially if the prospects for getting a CLO done are so far out into the future and the distant that you can't see them, they've got to move on at some point to revenue generating activities. And so at some point, you know, they will force liquidations of those warehouses, you know, and force those first loss providers, whether they be the managers themselves or third party providers to incur whatever losses may be incurred, you know, by clearing out that balance sheet. So, I don't expect that to be, create a gigantic gaping wound, you know, in the market. You know, we've seen those liquidations can go off fairly orderly, and there's lots of different options. You know, people could come in and take out the previous equity owner, and you know, there are all sorts of different ways they can do that. But that activity, you know, unless the CLO market sort of the engine sort of, you know, kind of revs up again and, you know, gets a little bit warmer, I think unfortunately you're going to have to see them clear some of that balance sheet capacity out.
Got it. Well, let's talk about whether there's prospects for things getting a little warmer in CLOs. I mean, we've seen lots of deals with shorter tenors, both the non-call and the reinvestment. We've seen static deals. We've seen, I guess I'd call it hybrid print and sprint. We've seen all-out print and sprint. I mean, what's your view of kind of de novo CLO economics these days and the flavor of the stuff we might be likely to see, you know, over the next 6 to 12 months or so?
Yeah, it's going to be, listen, the you know, de novo arb right now is just not real attractive. And I think, you know, that you can tell that by the lack of new issue activity. I had somebody email me today and said, hey, can you scan your emails and send me all the you know, kind of the new issue announcements over the last couple of weeks? And I think I had like two or three, you know, so the arb is just not attractive, you know. And what you've seen is a victim. The arb is a little bit of a victim of the loans and the liability is kind of going in a little bit of a different direction for a period of time. You know, the liability is widened out. You know, you're at 200 plus over for AAAs. And you had that rally in the high yield, really in the broad markets, but high yield and loan market, July into August. And it really pushed the arb out of reach. You know, loans are trading too high. Liabilities are trading too wide. And over the last couple of weeks, you've seen loans sort of like start drifting back down a little bit. But not to the level where the arb makes sense at a 2 to 220 AAA. Could it get there? It could, but it means that loans need to trade down further. And if loans trade down further, it begs the question, what's going on in the broader market? And then do liabilities go wider from where they are? So it's a little bit of a game of chicken. I would say on top of that, just a simple mathematical arb, you know, you've got to deal with just a risk-off sentiment. You know, there are investors now, you know, some of the larger Japanese, you know, accounts, they're out of the market. You know, they're telling people we're out, we're not buying anything, and, you know, we'll come back when we're ready. And so the risk-off tone, which I think you see the risk-off tone impacting the new issue high-yield market. It's impacting every market. That has taken hold a little bit, and I think it just it nobody really, even if the math worked theoretically on the ARB, I think it'd be difficult to round up a deal easily. I think we're in for a little bit of a quiet patch between now and year end, and I don't think you're not going to see lots of activity. And I think that the activity that you do see, it's either people that had a unique asset ramp strategy where the ARB actually does work, because it's not universal, obviously, right? Each person's ARB is unique to the portfolio that they ramped. And if you ramped a portfolio at 90 and somebody else ramped a portfolio at 97, the ARB is totally different. So the guy at 90 may be able to print in today's market. So you'll see stuff like that. But I think it's going to be – we're going to hit a rough patch just in terms of lack of activity, I think, between now and year end, unless something really happens one way or the other in the asset or the liability market.
Okay, super. Well, look, I know we were aiming for about a half an hour here, and I think I've been at least okay about capturing some of the questions from our listeners. I'd just say on a brighter note, I hope for everyone's sake that we hit the inflection point in inflation, where at least we have a sense that we know about what the future holds. But I would tend to agree with you at this point. We're at least months off in that.
Yeah.
So, Joe, listen, thanks a bunch for jumping on the video this morning or this afternoon. Joe, thanks to our listeners for dialing in. We're going to post a replay of this call on the APS Portfolio Strategy website tomorrow. But that wraps it up for today. This has been Masters of Credit, an APS Portfolio Strategy call. Have a good day and good luck in the markets.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
You bet.